this is Tiffany the Lass.
This is Pirate Davy Jones of PiratePods.com. Today we're at Adams Avenue Street Fair speaking with Bart Mendoza, front man, songwriter of The Shambles, also a great journalist in San Diego. Please introduce yourself, Bart.
Yeah, hi, I'm Bart Mendoza, and like you said, I play with a zillion bands. Today I was playing with Wendy Bailey and True Stories, but you see me on stage with Marcus Cerebro, Anna Troy, all kinds of people. So I'm having a lot of fun here today.
You're a lifer.
Yeah, actually, that's a good way to put it. I am a lifer. I used to joke that when I'm 70 years old, even if I'm not in a band anymore, you'll find me at the OB Pier on a bench with a cup, and a guitar. And, people laugh, but that's actually not a bad life the way I see it. It's like day at the beach, a cup of money, it's all good.
Mm-hmm. And in San Diego, right?
Yeah, and in San Diego, right? I mean, what could be, this is great. We're just admiring the view from the stage alone was worth it. I mean, just got the church and the trees and then the fairground rides in the background. It's just amazing.
Being a San Diego musician, I wanted to ask you, what changes have you seen in San Diego? I want to know, what is it, the most striking change that you've seen here?
The most striking change, this is easy actually, it's the fact that musicians here are taken seriously anywhere at this point. Back in the 60s and 70s, you pretty much had to leave San Diego automatically to make it. And if they found out you were from San Diego, it's pretty much the kiss of death. They just weren't interested, which is why so many people moved to the Bay Area. Chris Hillman had to go north, etc., for the birds. But starting in around the early 90s, when the Rocket from the Crypt scene, the Casbah scene started to come up, people started taking the musicians here seriously, and you can see the evidence now on the charts. It's constantly, there's always somebody in some movie. Anya's in Twilight now, and there's always some new thing about to happen. Whoever thought a guy like Jason Mraz, great guy that he is, would be able to do a free concert for everybody at Cricket Amphitheater? I mean, that's just unbelievable. From San Diego, but yeah, that's great. So that's the biggest change that I've seen.
Can you tell us about your album that was released at the beginning of September?
Oh yeah, the 4160 album, the covers thing. That came out because we were on tour in Spain, and while I was there, I was lucky enough to find a publisher. Somebody set up a meeting with me, and they went for it, okay? So their idea was, since some of my songs had already been recorded by other artists that I didn't even know about, I was just Googling and went, hey, Kingpin's Plan of Action, I have a song just like that. And we looked at it and went, wait a minute, oh, that is my song. this is like that. So they said, we've signed you, we need to promote your music. Why don't you get those covers together, and we'll put out an EP? Well, that ended up being, when I brought the songs and they said, well, you've got a few friends that have studios, have them. It ended up turning into this huge project, which we've got that album, which has 24 songs in it, and there's another 18 songs that didn't make it onto the album.
Wow.
So basically, it was done to promote the song catalog to movies and TV. The fact that it's on sale and stuff is almost incidental, although, we hope to sell a few copies, mm-hmm. by all means. But the purpose of it is really to get the catalog of songs out to the mass media. We'll see what happens. Everybody's doing the same thing, I think. But I got to tell you that when I was helping put it together, it was like, okay, yeah, whatever. But once you actually see it and you listen to it once through and went, I wrote all this, that was kind of a cool feeling.
Yeah.
That was a very, very cool feeling. The downside is, and this is one of the negative things about music right now, is that the album was originally supposed to be on Snap Records in Spain. After negotiating and, we got funds and everything like that, they went out of business. So then we went to a label in Germany who also did the funds and everything like that. And then they went out of business. And then, so we went to a Japanese label and they did it and got the cover done. That's when we finished up the cover and the mastering and stuff. And then they went out of business. So it took us years and years and years because we didn't want to just do it ourselves. We wanted to actually work with a real company. And so we ended up finally an American company, which we should have gone to in the first place, which is Jam Recordings out of Michigan that ended up doing the album. But it's just like, it was like dominoes. We'd be like, we got a deal, awesome. And then on Monday, they went out of business. What? Again? but that's the downloading thing, unfortunately, hasn't really hurt the major labels because they've got, so-and-so owns Seagram's Whiskey, so the money comes from everywhere else. What it's done is it's really hurt the independent labels, the little guys. That's who really got wiped out. And so, like I said, just watching the domino effect of all the labels falling, it's very frightening. But there's still a few left, and I think once the big thin out comes, which will be very soon, actually, there's very little money to be made in music anymore, so you got to do it because you love it. Once that thin out comes, I think that it'll build itself up again to a certain level. I don't think it'll ever be like the heyday of, say, Nirvana, Madonna in the early 90s, but it'll certainly go back to what it was in the mid-60s, which was the peak anyway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 67, you had what? Pink Floyd, The Velvet Underground, The Beatles, The King. And it's just, that was like it, as far as like the Supremes, you know, Marvin Gaye. It was all, that was the time. And I think it'll go back
around,
to...
across all genres.
Yeah, exactly.
Bart, I want to ask you this one. What's your typical Bart meal?
A typical Bart meal? You know, I tend to go in phases with food, so it's like... I will eat the same thing like for a month and then just be sick of it for 2 or 3 years. Right now, my big thing is takeout Hawaiian barbecue from Fifth Avenue. I forget the name of the place right now, but that's like a daily occurrence. And then my midnight meal is La Posta. And it's the same thing always. It's half pint rice, half pint beans, 3 roll tacos. Yeah. That's just that's the magic late night food. Yeah, you can get good sleep with that in your stomach. So that's my favorite thing. You know, because I don't drink caffeine, I don't drink alcohol, so it's, you know, my vice is roll tacos.
Right on.
Back to 4160. Uh-huh. Your song, The American Way.
Uh-huh.
In it, you say it's going to stay that way.
It's going to stay that way. Well. The song has two different parts to it. One is why it was created, and then there's what it became about. And the song is kind of like, I had read a lot of British mod scenes and magazines and stuff, and they were kind of like, you know, the Americans are very uptight, they're very, you know, the ugly tourist kind of thing like that. So that's kind of what the song was about. It's going to stay that, you know, just kind of pointing things out that were a little obvious, very influenced by The Jam, obviously. But here's a little piece of trivia that I've never told anybody before. But the song is actually written based on an episode of Chips.
Oh, really?
Because there's an episode. It's got, the story has nothing to do with the lyrics. But what happened was we were watching TV, and this is like in high school, and it's a Chips rerun. And in the episode, Eric Estrada keeps saying, you know, whatever happens, he goes, it's the American way. It's the American way. And, you know, we were kids, so we were a little drunk, you know, we were 16 or something like that. And I said, you know, if he says that one more time, I'm going to write a song about it. And so I kind of basically got held to that by the rest of the band, and that's where the song came from. So, joke beginning, but it ended up being a little more serious. What's really gotten to me about that one is that I've actually found that song on, like, not military sites, but sites that... U.S. soldiers have,
really?
Like their own pages and stuff like that. I was like, really? So that was kind of interesting, yeah, that it tagged onto that. I think a little bit of that also comes from the imagery of the cover with the Air Force jets going overhead and stuff like that. Uh-huh. So I think that also leads into it. But that actually surprised me that, you know, whoever wants to listen to it, I'm all for it, you know, but that,
sure.
It was just kind of cool that it made that connection.
Yeah.
However, nobody from the Chips fan club has commented on it.
They don't remember that dialogue there.
You know, what's going to happen is someday,
episode, right?
Someday over the next 30 years, you'll be flipping channels, and that episode's going to be on. You're going to go, oh, okay.
I know. Yeah, thank you.
Thing in San Diego that you'd like to see changed by tomorrow, what would that be?
Okay, that's an easy one too. This is universal actually, because it's affecting everything. What I would like to see is a greater appreciation for seeing the arts live. Okay, it's like all of a sudden everybody's happy to see the museum piece online when you can go see the Mona Lisa in person. And that just doesn't make sense to me. You know, right now you're seeing dwindling attendance. There was actually NEA study recently that showed classical, opera, jazz, dance, all tanking attendance-wise, you know, and that's just a real shame, because if it goes too much further, it'll be hard to resurrect it again. That's why things like Kevin Hellman and the Music Foundation, and there's a bunch of people doing things now, but all of that stuff becomes so important. So if I could change one thing, it would be just a greater appreciation for live attendance and things. You know, hey, if you want to go see polka, go see polka. If you want to go see, you know, Dancing Bears, go see Dancing Bears, but at least go out and see this support it, you know? The other thing that gets me too, in the same vein, is in San Diego. San Diego's kind of like the city of free music. You can go see free music any night of the week somewhere. Yeah. Whether, I mean, Gilbert Castellanos down at the Onyx Room, these street fairs, all this kind of stuff. And yet it's hard to get 100 people to go to a show. You know, it's just rough. There's almost 2 million people here, and you can't get 30 to show up. So it's just, you know, it's disappointing. I saw Joey Harris with Anna Troy at Java Joe's on Thursday. You know, four people.
Really?
Four people in the audience, not including me. And I'm thinking, you know, that's...
It's tragic. I mean, that type of thing is a real shame. And, you know, there's great quality music out there, but just not enough people going out and spending the time to see it, to get together.
This is where
it's gonna be a better ride.
Yeah, this is where I think that the great thinning is going to happen. Because right now, everything's oversaturated. You know, it's just there's too much of everything. Whether it's television, there's too many pizza shops, there's too many Starbucks, God forbid, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that once it thins out just a smidge, we will be okay. Right now, even if you're fantastic, you could be the greatest band in the world, but you're still thrown in with 35,000 other people that people have to sort through, you know? That was kind of part of the magic of the record label, so that was kind of part of their job, so in addition to giving you money to tour and things like that. So anyway, that's the thin out philosophy.
Speaking of record labels, can you tell us a little bit about your experience at Capitol?
Oh, yeah, Capitol Records. You know, I've been very fortunate to never having worked food service or anything like that. I've always wanted it. Like, I saw a cool job. I wanted it. I went for it. And Capitol Records, I kind of fell into where a label rep that I knew called me up and said, hey, would you mind dropping off some... I don't want to drive all the way to Chula Vista from L.A. Could I send you some posters? Go put them up. And I said, yes. Within 2 or 3 weeks, it was like a daily phone call. Hey, Red Hot Chili Peppers are in town. We need this. So they ended up hiring me. And the funny thing to me was that I ended up working for SEMA, Capital EMI Marketing Associates, whatever it was, for 11 years.
Wow.
Okay. I outlasted 9 bosses. And then that's where I learned the very true etiquette that if you're not in the office, you're not the first guy fired. See? Hey, get Mendoza in here. Oh, he's not here. All right, Jones, you. It's just kind of like that. So, you know, it was a great, great ride. Probably one of the funnest things I've ever done in my life. It was also incredibly boring and very, because at the time, we're talking pre-computers when we started.
Yeah.
And so when we had to do inventory, it was like literally go in the tower and count everything by hand. So on the plus side, every promo I wanted, every concert ticket I wanted, every blah, 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 blah. And I got to meet just, I mean, hanging out with Depeche Mode or, you know, meeting, going to lunch with Sheena Easton or hanging out with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You see, it's funny too because at the time, it's very uncool form to ask for autographs or photos or anything like that because you're working, that's work, and so you don't do that. But over the last year or so, because of Facebook, other people that were there at the time have started putting post pictures up, and that's really, really cool. I just got one to meet with Bonnie Raitt from like '89, and there's one right now on the page with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and me with Harry Nilsson and kind of stuff like that. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Yeah.
I am bummed that I did not break that rule because, I mean, there's times when like, there's Paul McCartney or, you know, Mr. Springsteen, good to meet you, you know, like that. And you can't really, because if you do and your boss sees it, you're canned. Pretty much on the spot. Oh, yeah, yeah, you don't bother to. No. It's like I heard that when Beyonce, well, for Beyonce in particular, it's a reason in San Diego, but when Beyonce walks down the hall to the stage, everybody has to clear the area. And if you're walking that way, you have to go into a room out of her way.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got to see that end of it too, but for the most part, all the rock stars are really, really cool. You know, I can Heart, thumbs up, Heart. Iron Maiden, great guys. You know, Duran, tops. There's a few that weren't, but I won't mention them. But yeah,
okay.
Overall, all good stuff. That was a dream job, and you know, when I started out, really, the only thing I really wanted out of it was a company T-shirt with the logo on it. I thought that'd be cool to have. You know, I got that, and I ended up staying for another 10 years. I was their secret weapon down here and stuff like that. And so, like, I mean, literally everything from, I remember the first time Dave Sharp for the Alarm played solo, he borrowed Manuel Scan's PA. You know, we just whatever they needed, seriously. And what happened a lot of times is that the reps from LA don't want to drive down to see Iron Maiden for the 30th time. You know, so Bart, you take care of it. All right, cool. I'm on it. You know, so like that. Yeah, and it was great. I mean, it might be Vixen and Great White one night, but then the next night it was Thomas Dolby, you know, or the other great scam. And, you know, anybody out there that wants to work for a record label, pick this one up real fast. Let's say, oh, the Rolling Stones are coming to town, right? Well, there's no way in hell you're getting tickets for that, right? Not a chance. But you know what? That opening act, three bands down, is desperate for attention. Hit them up. You got tickets.
Okay.
Yep. That always works. So, here, a little tip for you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bart, for providing us with great insight in San Diego and the music scene in general. You also, I think you even carried it out internationally. You actually spoke of going to see Mona Lisa live and such, and versus seeing it online. One thing that we commonly ask all of the people we interview is to do your best pirate impression. So,
all I can say is, arr! You know, I'm not the pirate in the band, unfortunately. Kevin is, because he's the vampire, you know?
Oh.
I don't know if you're familiar with that, but Kevin in The Shambles, Kevin Doniger Ring, is actually the co-creator of the comic book Vampirates, which is a combination of vampires and pirates. Supposedly, I might be getting this wrong, but there's going to be like some troubadour that always gets in trouble. That'll be Bart. But Kevin and his wife are both in there, and they're pirates. And it's actually kind of cool. That's one of the neat little sidebars that we've got. There's actually quite a few comic books that if you look, you'll find Manual Scan or Shambles Graffiti, or you'll see me walking by in a scene. Or there's actually a bunch of stuff like that. It's really kind of funny.
Excellent.
Yeah. Doesn't take time for money.